Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
It's me. It's so cool to see it. Like, that's me. My wife, after we were at the premiere the first time we saw the film, and as soon as the movie was over, she said, that was one of the most you characters you've ever played in your entire career.
Wow.
Because I talk with my hands like Feb, and we have a similar voice, and, you know, there's a nice holes you've got there. Quite a bunch of holes.
All right, welcome back to an absolutely jam-packed episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's a podcast that's hosted by me, Kyle Schoenewill, and my longtime friend, Robbie Earle.
You just heard from comic book movie cornerstone.
Yes, you did.
David Dasmalchian. We got to chat with David about his work in the Ant-Man films and beyond, as well as his ongoing book from Dark Horse Comics, a comic book called Count Crowley. It's actually Count Crowley in The Reluctant Midnight Monster Hunter, I think. Although one of the fun things is he swaps up the adjectives each book, which is to say that David and I maybe both have a compulsive obsession with finding the exact right word in every situation. You can catch more of that conversation at the tail end of this episode.
Yes.
But you can catch the whole conversation over on our YouTube page in video form or in podcast form on Friends from Work Plus, where you can also find coverage of everything from the classic Marvel movies of yesteryear to your favorite comics, cartoons, hint, hint, and more. So visit the FFWpodcast.com/engage today to learn why Friends from Work Plus is right for you.
And you're going to want to hear from him because your intro to that interview is listing all the things he's been in. And I did not realize, like, I guess I've seen all these things.
Right, yeah.
But
yeah.
I didn't realize, like, obviously my first introduction to him ever was The Dark Knight, which is so crazy. But dude, yeah, he's like massive now in the DC world with Suicide Squad and Polka Dot Man, I think his name is.
Yeah.
Obviously on the Ant-Man front with Kurt and also now voicing Veb, as you just heard. But then, by the way, motion capturing Feb, which I didn't know.
Yeah, he actually anticipates a few of the questions I was going to ask him in his first answer. Like, all these things I wanted to know, he just kind of rattles off. It's another case of just being more in love with his work because of how in love with it he is.
Correct.
Like, we've talked about the kind of good fortune we've had of being able to interview a lot of folks that genuinely enjoy and care about their additions to the MCU and to their respective films. And he, I mean, like,
and there are levels to this. It's not a bad thing. A lot of people we talk to love it.
Right.
And that's good. They love it. But then there are a few that we talk to, like him, where you can tell, like, this is his life's passion.
And it's such, I mean, he's got a really cool story that he kind of hints at here in the interview. But I mean, he was dealing with serious addiction for, I think, 5 years. At one point, he was a fisherman in Alaska. He came back and got back into acting, which I think he had kind of been into early in his life before he got, like, sidetracked by, again, like, really serious heroin addiction. And then came back and just started
Got sober.
Killing it. Yes. Yeah. And just climbing up the ladder of these just franchises, but also incredible movies. I mean, like the role he has in Prisoners is, I don't know the last time you saw that movie. Oh, dude. It's like, it's wild. Like he,
say less.
He is, as we were, yeah, as I was putting together that intro, normally, one, it doesn't have to be that long. Sure. But this, I just kept being like, well, I can't leave this movie out. And two, getting to talk to him and hearing about his own story in terms of kind of what he had to overcome, but then also how that plays into the comic that he's now writing for Dark Horse. It was a ton of fun to talk to him. He's such, and I had heard this and kind of read this from other folks that had gotten to speak with him, but he is such a sweet guy. Like one of the nicest guys that we've ever gotten to talk to just in general. And someone that has clearly, from the time he was, you know, a little kid, loved superhero stories and loved kind of sci-fi, fantasy, like, again, monster stories like you see in the Count Crowley comic. And so it's even cooler to me to see him have now been involved in multiple movies with both DC and Marvel as multiple characters, in addition, again, to Dune and all the other things that we've kind of talked about. So really, really cool guy. I think that folks will enjoy getting to hear more from him.
So for today, like you said, if you want that full interview, go to YouTube or Friends from Work Plus. And then we're going to play another clip from it here in a minute at the end of this episode. So we'll kind of shift gears there. But in the meantime, I have some MCU news as well at the front here. And then getting into Falcon and Winter Soldier and kind of our reflection and rewatch journey of that show.
Mm-hmm.
And then that clip from David. So an absolutely jam-packed episode.
Yes.
I want to start today briefly, just because you've probably already heard this. We both felt obligated to bring this up. Before I get into the fun MCU news, if you haven't already heard, kind of the big news from last weekend, and I got to give a disclaimer here. It's Monday, March 27th, while we are recording this. And so I say that because by the time this episode comes out on Thursday, we may have more information, and so this may be dated. But for those of you who don't know, Jonathan Majors was arrested last weekend in New York City, which is obviously not good regardless, on assault and or domestic abuse call. But details are totally still coming out on all sides of this thing. And so it's obviously not a good situation, but I do want to encourage everyone to wait while we get more details on this. Moving on to other MCU news, if that's all right. Okay, actually, randomly, a lot of MCU news came out today. First of all, and I don't know if this was an error or not, but on Disney Plus's website, not on the app, they have now listed Secret Invasion as a starting date of June 21st.
Wow.
Now, at some point, somebody had to type that in.
Yeah.
at June 21st. So even if it was a leak, maybe that's when we're getting Secret Invasion.
Well, and at one point, which I had read reports that Loki season 2 was likely being pushed back a tad. And I feel like Loki season 2 was originally slotted for the summer spot. So I wonder if we're going to see Secret Invasion take that and Loki show up sometime in the fall or later.
I think this mostly makes sense now that we don't have that July film, right? So it would be this running for most of July into part of August, and then they could either do Loki right then or wait till the Marvels in November and then do Loki to close out the whole year. There's still time for it to happen this year, but yeah, it won't be this summer.
Yeah.
But I'm obviously excited about that. I think in a weird way, I actually watched a video about this the other day. For whatever you think about the MCU, I do think that that show in particular has a chance at turning some people's opinion around on like Disney Plus and, you know, how we feel about it.
Right.
Which I don't agree with a lot of things that people say. But if you have been lukewarm on like the galactic side or the quantum realm side, maybe something like Secret Invasion, depending on how they do it, has a chance to turn people's opinion. So I'm excited about that. Secondly, and this may be the best one slash most fun, Vincent D'Onofrio has been making some of the media rounds because he was at some comic thing. Do you know?
I don't know where he was, but I did see at least screenshots. So I haven't seen the actual video, but I saw the quotes that were getting people all hot and bothered.
Well, in a good way. Right. In a very, very good way.
I love being hot and bothered.
First of all, the first one he said that everyone's loving, including myself, is that he said, eventually I will beat Spider-Man's ass. Which is a legendary quote in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But he's aware at least of that tie and that connection, which makes me wonder, like, is Spider-Man at all involved in Daredevil, or is that happening later?
You know, like, one thing that I think is going to be really interesting as we kind of progress forward with Spider-Man. And we've talked about that a lot, so I'm not going to go on a huge rabbit hole here, but Spider-Man is a character that started out being, I mean, there are isolated incidents, you know, like the famous one of him lifting the rubble, showing him being super strong. But at the same time, the people that he was fighting were not often like Hulk level or even like Namor level, like strong people. Like, he's fighting in a lot of instances in those early issues, not even people that had superpowers at all. Like, he would just fight a lot of either like henchmen, or finally, my point, he fought the Kingpin, who in the comics at that stage was just like a really big, bulky, strong guy, and beat Spider-Man, right? Like, in the same way that he beats Daredevil and other things. And of course, you know, Spider-Man comes back and wins. But it's, you know, in the MCU,
they might have an explanation, though. Maybe he's slightly elevated in some way. Because in the MCU, he breaks off a car door with his hand. So the one clip we saw of him is almost super strength level.
But in the, you know, but Spider-Man, we've seen
I know.
You know, like.
So they might have to elevate him, though.
Yeah. I mean, they probably. I'll be curious to see, because you almost have two sides of it, right? Like, ultimately, ever since Frank Miller's Born Again, which was not until the 80s, Kingpin was created back in the 60s. Like, for the longest time, it was Spider-Man and the Kingpin. And then now the much more important relationship is Daredevil and Kingpin. And if you do elevate Kingpin to a point where he now has, like, legit super strength, then I think that really messes with the dynamic between Daredevil and Kingpin, where they're both supposed to be fundamentally like.
There's a happy medium there, though, because Daredevil can do some things that are pretty, you know.
He has enhanced senses, obviously. But I think what it's supposed to be, my understanding has been, particularly in the way Charlie Cox has played the character, he is just like the most like skilled at fighting that a human being can be without having any kind of extra superpowers. Like, I think the idea is that.
But his senses are his superpower too.
No, right. But I think, those increase his like agility and that comes in. But I just think in terms of like the actual like strength that he can inflict, I know I'm getting caught up on this, but I think it's important that they are both supposed to just be like men, right? Like not superheroes per se, or supervillain.
But a quote like that could also be playing into something that we wanted from the Hawkeye show. Maybe it's more like behind the scenes, I'm going to beat Spider-Man's ass. Maybe they never actually fight in this.
Well, and
you know, that's one of the things that the show originally from Netflix did really well, is that for the most part, it's not Daredevil like in a punching fight with Kingpin.
Right.
It's Daredevil trying to like avoid traps that Kingpin set, or like fighting Kingpin's henchmen or whatever. Yeah. Until, like, well, I won't spoil anything, but there's not very many moments like that.
That's why, I mean, there are moments in Spider-Man comic history more recently which involve some of the more, like, controversial Spider-Man stories, but where Kingpin does basically he gets involved in Peter's life in a way that he essentially plans an assassination and has Aunt May killed. Stuff that I don't think will happen. Well, one, Aunt May can't be killed because that's already happened. But also, but also, like, that is all, that all comes about because of, like, Peter's identity being made public, and they've already clearly explored that ground in No Way Home. But I do like the way that Kingpin, like, you're right, like, that is how he really inflicts damage, is the way that he can pull strings and the way that he can trip people up without them even knowing that it's him doing it. But what I love is that arc ends with Peter chasing him down and just, like, beating him to a pulp. And there's this great bit from Straczynski where he's like, you know, I always, because of how much damage you've done, I always forget that you're just a guy and I'm Spider-Man. It's incredible, because it's like, you do forget that he's not, he doesn't have superpowers. He's just this guy that has managed to make everyone's life so bad. And in, he takes advantage of the fact that heroes are unwilling to cross certain lines. But it's like, when he makes Spider-Man mad enough and he's actually dealing with someone with, like, super strength. And I like, I don't know. So I like that dynamic. I'm
Look
excited
at Robbie
to see
being the power
to.
Levels guy. Wow. Well, actually, he had two other quotes I think you're going to really like. Okay, I'm going to read them for you. First of all, he said, "We just started shooting. I think we're only a couple weeks in, and the show is going to be very, very different than the Netflix show. Don't freak out. And it's so exciting because what we're doing is quite something. I think it's something that people are not going to expect, but always with these Marvel old comic stories that are being revisited and reinvented by us actors and the writers, the main thing is to answer the fans." Listen to this, though. "To give them what they want, but to try to be original in some way at the same time. And so that's what we're doing on the show. It's definitely an original way to look at this, and it's really deep and really emotional." Which, I like that last clip, because obviously people's first thought's going to be, oh, that means he's saying it's going to be so silly and so different.
Right.
Right. But I think I like that the one trait he's highlighting here where it's really different is how emotional it is.
Yeah.
I don't think you say that if he knows it's going to be, like, a joke the whole time.
No.
And then this was the last bit of news from Vincent, and I think this is just a clarification error, and so maybe by Thursday this has been cleared up. And today, as of right now, while we record this, it's got everyone in a tizzy. It says, he says, "And by the second season, there are gigantic, gigantic payoffs. In the first season, too, but I can't say much about that. But the fans are really going to get what they want. It's really quite cool to be doing it." So everyone's freaking out going, he now confirms there's a second season. However, I saw an account follow up, because all these articles are about second season, second season. An article followed up that said, and I don't know if this can be trusted, but someone said, "I think he's just meaning 9 episodes and 9 episodes. Because remember, it's 18.
Right. So that's already, what I was thinking.
Maybe they are splitting them up in some way. Or at least in production, maybe. They're being told, like, this is, like, chunk one and chunk two. Yeah. They're just filming all 18 at once.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it could even be 6 if we're looking at, like, the normal Disney Plus.
Oh, 666, maybe.
Yeah, I mean.
667 or something.
Devil.
hey, you're devil.
but I do. Yeah, I mean, I think I.
But that's what it's always had to be. They can't do an 18-episode season. Not if they're an hour long.
No, I wouldn't want. I think that would be a bad idea.
I think so too. We felt like 13 was a bad idea.
Right. Yeah. I think at least 9, but
I feel like 9 hours as a chunk and then, like, wait a few months and do another 9 hours would be incredible.
That feels about right to me. And cause we've always said that like the 8 to 10 episode, like, that's the sweet spot.
That is the sweet spot. Yeah.
When it comes to this kind of, like, quote unquote prestige television.
So I thought you'd like that.
Yeah. I love that. That's great news.
Last bit of what's new in the MCU, and then we're going to get into Falcon and Winter Soldier. This is not as big of a deal, but Thunderbolts is coming. Thunderbolts is coming. Yeah. It's official. But David Harbour this week teased that it's really trippy and it's really fun. It sets up a whole new thing moving forward with the MCU. And I'm just excited to see what happens with Thunderbolts now. They're kind of getting it rolling already, so.
I am too. I'm getting more excited about that one, in part because I'm excited to see Harrison Ford and what that looks like.
What a cast. What in the world?
Dude, it's also just, it's crazy because I feel like Candace and I have been getting caught up on Shrinking which is an excellent show, by the way. It's from Bill Lawrence, who did Ted Lasso, but also closer to my heart did Scrubs and kind of a bunch of other late 90s, early 2000s stuff. But it's Harrison Ford and Jason Segel. And it's crazy to me, like some of the, like what he's bringing to that show. When I feel like a couple years ago, it was like, you couldn't really get Harrison Ford to do anything. Like he was just so kind of not,
yeah,
stoked to be like,
doing unless, anything.
I think Blade Runner was the exception, because that was a project that he was apparently really, like, he really liked the original and was really excited to follow up. That movie was incredible. But otherwise, it was like,
yeah, little did we know we were about to have like the next 5 years be the year of Harrison Ford.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's also doing Indiana Jones, I think, this summer, right?
Yeah, which he also seems really stoked about. Like, it's like out of nowhere, he was just I'm going to be into it again.
I'm going to make movies. Yeah, that's true. It's not just I'm going to make movies again. I'm going to care again.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that. That also ties into another bit of news around Thunderbolts, right? In terms of a new confirmed returning character from way, way back.
Oh, yes. I forgot another. Thanks for the hint. It is confirmed that Liv Tyler will be returning as Betty Ross.
Yeah.
Actually in Captain America 4.
Oh, okay. Okay. That makes sense.
Yes. Captain America 4. By the way, which someone made this incredible meme on Slack that makes me laugh so hard. And it's that Jordan meme, the Michael Jordan meme, where it says, Kevin Feige, when he heard people say you can skip the Incredible Hulk, and it's Jordan meme going, and I took that personally. I took that personally. So she's back. This is crazy, man. He's bringing it all back together. And so, that's a wild bit of MCU news, which actually leads as a perfect transition for us into our coverage of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, a rewatch. Rewatch 25, Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So wild. How about that? Transition from news right into the show.
Yeah, I love it. You know I love that.
If only I'd come up with a clever name for this transition. They had alliteration in it.
Then I'm just living in my sweet spot.
That's right. All right, so let's get into that after a quick word from these sponsors. Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I think just like last week, let's break it down. What worked for you now that you've seen it a bunch? We've had a lot of time. What still doesn't work for you?
Mm-hmm.
And then what can we take away from that show and project it forward for the MCU?
Yeah. So first off, even before I get into the kind of what worked, looking at the story that I think we can see through the Phase 4 watch order that we've talked about.
Oh yeah, please. I'm
By
sorry.
The way, I
I'm
say
sorry
that.
You feel slighted. I didn't remember the watch order.
Well, I have not gotten the chance to go through all of the submissions since last week of what we should call the different the phases on the Friends from Work side, but there were a lot. And I very like some really thoughtful suggestions. So I'm not prepared to make a change today. I will try to just avoid using that terminology to refer to this period in the Friends from Work watch order, just to keep confusion away for a bit. But I think soon, maybe by the end of this first arc, we'll kind of have a final decision on that. That said, what I do like about having Falcon Winter Soldier next in this watch order, I appreciate that we start super small with WandaVision. Like, it's a really focused narrative where you really don't leave. I mean, the only time that you leave Westview is either in Wanda's flashbacks or in the episode 4 kind of getting up to speed with Monica moments. And otherwise, it's really rooted, and it's rooted in a small town that's supposed to feel like a small town. And so I like that's the kind of emotional introduction we get to the world post-blip. But then the next thing is we zoom out a good bit more, both to see the global reaction, but also to see specifically kind of the geopolitical reaction there. So it's like, I feel like you, which to me makes the most sense. Like you start with, I think, what would be the biggest question coming out of something like that, which is, how is this impacting people in their lives, like on an emotional level? And then how is this impacting just the way the world works, like the way that the world functions? Because I think, that was the, when we were leaving Endgame, once you kind of had time to pick your jaw up, it then became like, what does the world even look like after something like that? Like, how do people remember that? How do people talk about it? And so I feel like we're widening the circle here. And then I think, next week we'll talk about why I feel like Far From Home is the perfect way to continue that and also sort of wrap it before we move to the next arc.
Okay. Something I forgot. Okay. First of all, what a perfect picture of the differences between you and I. You have notes down to your left about what you wanted to add and make sure you got detailed about the watch order, which is incredible and why I need you. The second thing is I forgot about, we have to do a little plot recap. And then I was listening back to our last episode about WandaVision last week. And I realized, having a 2.5-year-old daughter right now watching so much Frozen, that I, doing my WandaVision recap, reminded myself of Olaf when he has to do the quick recap of Frozen 1 in Frozen 2. And it's like so ridiculous. That's what I sounded like doing the WandaVision recap. And so the difference is you have nice prepared notes for all the rewatch things. And I'm just winging a plot recap off the top of my head.
Yeah, but honestly, like surprisingly effective.
Hey, well, Olaf does a good job too.
And I do think this show will lend itself more to an easy recap. And because, which I think is sort of the last, well, that'll be more of, I'll get into this more with my what works, but I think that this is a show that is much more in line with what we've said Disney Plus shows have been for Marvel, which is a movie that's been stretched out. Like we talked about how WandaVision and She-Hulk are so unique and how episodic they really are. And now we're getting into the era where, for better or for worse, you see how there's not necessarily enough going on to justify the runtime. But I do think that if you when you watch it in one chunk like this, the story is fairly, it's moving at times, but I think that the storylines are fairly simple.
Totally. So are you waiting for me to give it a shot then?
Yeah, come on.
Okay. gosh. And so I rewatched this one actually a little bit ago, so I don't have notes.
I can help.
But yeah. So Bucky, his main through line is that he is dealing with the trauma of his past and trying to make amends for things he did as Winter Soldier, even though he didn't know what he was doing. Mm-hmm. Kind of a shout out to Civil War in the conversation he has with Captain America there. But he's trying to work through that. And in that, he has isolated himself from a lot of people, including Sam. They're not on the best of terms, but circumstances force them to go back together and work together again. And they are trying to track down another wave of super soldiers with a new serum and trying to figure out where that came from. Meanwhile, Sam is trying to figure out what to do with the shield that Cap gave him at the end of Endgame. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really feel like his, even though Cap said it was. And he's wrestling with, what does it look like to be a black Captain America in this country? There is that subplot of him being a black Captain America with other people, other black people, specifically Isaiah Bradley and his conversations there and what Isaiah Bradley as an enhanced soldier had done for his country and how differently his life turned out from Captain America, and kind of getting two conflicting views from two black men on what it means between Sam and Isaiah.
Right.
So that's kind of the subplot of that. Meanwhile, in the actual just plot, they're trying to track down this serum, and Carly is a leader of this resistance that are all enhanced, and they have a group of people that are enhanced, and they're trying to recreate the serum. And meanwhile, there's a third party power broker out there trying to stop them or get it or control the whole deal. Mm-hmm. And so they're all kind of chasing each other. Meanwhile, the government puts out Wyatt Russell as a new Captain America instead of Sam. Mm-hmm. So now you have a fourth party trying to figure things out, and they're all kind of trying to get the same thing via a different way of getting there. And it ultimately ends up again, Olaf. It ultimately ends up with Sam and Bucky kind of coming to terms on like their differences, how they viewed the Shield, how they viewed the relationship with Steve, what that means still, and what does it mean for Sam to be a Black Captain America and for Bucky to be helping him in that. And then they go and stop Carly and the other Flag Smashers, which is the name of their group. So we leave with Sam being Captain America, essentially, in the full-blown new suit he got from Wakanda, which actually plays a role in this. And Zemo plays a role in this, which I forgot. Zemo shows up, helps out a little bit, and then goes back to jail.
Yeah. Which I want to talk about. But
that was not as good as my WandaVision one.
It's pretty good, though. But I want to – I like that you
– It's becoming a thing that people can look forward to every week now.
I like that there's that you found the through line of everyone kind of trying to get to the same thing but looking at it differently.
I found I was talking. That's Michael Scott style. I started a sentence not knowing where it was going, and then I found it along the way.
Yeah, there are several things there that I want to talk about in the what doesn't work category. But yeah, I mean, from my standpoint, just to kind of put a bow on what I was saying before you gave your excellent summary, I do think that what works here for me, like my biggest takeaway, and I think you and I differ on this particular point from when you and I were talking, I really felt like this improved a lot for me on this rewatch.
I do differ on that.
I think it was because, I mean, you know, who knows? I would, like we've said, it's always so interesting how much kind of plays into the way you respond to something in terms of like where you are in life and what you're just wanting out of something. But I had watched WandaVision like right after I went to the ER. I kind of did my first half of this binge of all these different Phase 4 projects. And so I started WandaVision, watched all of that, and really enjoyed it. But in some ways, because of what I was saying last week, I don't find WandaVision, and I know you and I disagree on this too, to be as bingeable to me, because it just almost feels like it benefits from the added both suspense and just like letting each episode stand on its own, with each one having a theme song and all that stuff. And then I came into Falcon Winter Soldier, and I think it's the first time I've watched it all in full. And I think I watched it in either one day or 2 days, but I just really blew through it. And I think this show specifically just feels like some of the episode cuts are almost like random, and it's hard. I remember at the time, it was hard to keep track of what we were supposed to, which storylines we should be really following, what like little characters that had been introduced in prior weeks were going to be significant. But I think just a lot of the moments from like the tying together of the first time that Bucky, like we see him eating at the restaurant with the father of this person that he killed. And then like, I think by the time we come back to that in episode 6, you know, 6 weeks later, that didn't really hit as hard for me, but I think seeing it close together and seeing that relationship and seeing him wrestling with it, you know, just a couple hours ago, all of that was enhanced. I thought a lot of the writing was better than I remembered, and the development for the most part, especially when it comes to Sam, was better than I remembered. Like I really thought Anthony Mackie's acting here in a couple scenes in particular was excellent. The writing in the show was generally fine to good, but I think that there were times where it either rises or falls on the performance, like on the way the actor is able to, like what Jeff Loveness was saying when we had him on, and he was talking about how he would write a thing, but then what Jonathan Majors would do with it kind of took it to a different place.
Please go watch our interview with Jeff Loveness.
Yes, which was a ton of fun for a lot of reasons. But I feel like there were times where I could see the actors that were able to do that whether that was them or the direction, which we'll talk about more. And then the ones that were not able to, but in the what works category, I just wanted to say, like, if you're going to rewatch this, I think trying to watch it as much as you can, like as a block, like as though you're sitting down to watch a Marvel movie, I think that's your best bet in getting, you know, the most out of your rewatch experience.
So I think for me, in the what works category, I kind of break it down into plot stuff versus execution stuff. I just had some smaller things and some bigger things. Like, for example, I think on a bigger plot front, like anything that involved Isaiah Bradley, I find myself drawn to more. I thought that was executed well. I thought seeing the different sides of it was interesting. Mm-hmm. I get moved emotionally by him seeing the memorial now inside the museum at the end of the show, mm-hmm. and like where he's come since then. I love that conversation. I think in the finale that they have in his like garden in the backyard.
Yeah.
In general, I was really into the Isaiah Bradley portion of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony Mackie's acting does go into that. On another big plot thing, I really enjoy the way that they made Anthony Mackie his own Captain America. Like, I think there could have been a tendency for him to have to fall back into certain things. And mm-hmm. I like that this is like Falcon, who now has been promoted to Captain America. And right. so even like he hasn't lost like all of his like jokey tone. He hasn't lost like all of his quips. Right. Like I think he understands the gravity of now being Captain America. So mm-hmm. he's like wrestling with stuff, but they haven't like totally started over as far as this is a new character now as Captain America. And so I kind of like that. I like this being Sam as Captain America.
Right.
And the differentiation there of Sam versus Steve Rogers. You know, more than Captain America versus Captain America.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's interesting because I've thought about this show sometimes in terms of when people ask about what they need to see, like what's essential, right? And getting past, oh, well, you know, you should watch all of it. I look at, well, what has the kind of, what would you be confused having not seen? And there were times, especially before Thunderbolts was announced, where I thought, you know, really, if you never see Falcon Winter Soldier, it leaves Sam about where you would have assumed after Endgame, right? Like he's got the shield, he's Captain America. And same kind of with Bucky. It brings them back to the spot where you're like, yeah, this is about where I think I would pick up. And in some ways, I would ding that. But I think that when it comes to Sam, to your point, had they not explored this in the way that they did here, I think it would have been a real disservice. Because I think to assume that Sam would have just kind of taken to it and that there wouldn't have been any, like he wouldn't have been torn, there wouldn't have been any level of like uncertainty or insecurity or public backlash, I think would be like it would be an overly naive read, but I think more importantly, it would just miss out on like a really unique story that you could tell with Sam. And I think you're right. I think that is the strongest part of this show is when they're telling that story, even when that story bleeds over into the Flag Smasher stuff. Like when you see Sam speaking from that experience to Carly, like those are the best moments here across the board. So I think even if you know, even if you step back and say like what really happened here, I think it's an example of them being able to, like in some ways, what I would like to see the different Disney Plus shows do, which is take us on kind of deep dives with certain characters in a way that you maybe can't do as easily in the context of a film where you've got a lot more limitations in terms of runtime and in terms of like the amount of time you can spend on any one thing whenever you've also, you know, you've captured an audience where you also need to introduce character X and move this storyline along and whatever.
That is something fun about the shows and something I think WandaVision does so well too, mm-hmm. is like, it is fun to get a chapter in the life of like Sam. Like basically, yeah. This is not a movie. So like, I don't need a ton of action. I just like, let's see what Sam has been up to for 2 months. And you can't do that in a movie. It wouldn't sell. But then that adds to the film. I've always liked that idea. And I think the show actually does that pretty well. Again, I'm not going to get to everything here because with these series, it's 6 hours worth of stuff. So there's going to be some things I miss. But I thought the way Julia Louis-Dreyfus shows up here is my favorite version and something that I don't like how they handled in Wakanda Forever. I feel like she took a step back. This is really fun how it's like mysterious. Like she has a card that doesn't have anything on it and she like knows too much. And you're like, how does she know that? And who is this? And the sarcasm and like the wit, like really like that. Really like it. And I remember live week by week being like, oh my gosh, who's this? What's she going to do? Blah, blah. I really like that intrigue. I thought that there actually were some on an execution level, some really cool scenes and sequences between Wyatt Russell's character, Sam Wilson, and Bucky. Like that three person fight there at the end.
That's a super cool fight.
Super cool fight. The opening sequence, by the way, is a cool sequence, action sequence when they're flying. But that fight is well choreographed. It's not like overwritten there. I feel like everybody is acting, in my opinion, appropriately given the situation. I like that they described that serum is maybe messing with his brain a little bit. So he's like heightened already emotionally, like basically just on adrenaline.
Right.
So there were moments where I really enjoyed how they handled those three as well.
Yeah, I love episode 4 and 5 of that show, I think are really strong. Five, both because it opens with that battle and then you get the bulk of the Isaiah work. But then also 4, like, you know, I like the Walker, like the fight there at the end between the Wakandans and Walker and then ultimately, the death of Battlestar. But,
which I also thought was handled pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. And is kind of brutal. But one thing that I thought was handled well on the John Walker front on this last watch. And again, I think this is in part not having the week to week stuff. I feel like at the time there was some kind of like light backlash to Walker being like quote unquote redeemed so quickly at the end by kind of helping out and how he, you know, he really had sort of a villain turn. And I just don't know that that's like, I'm rewatching it and it's clearly meant to be, you know, shocking and horrifying. And
the shot of the bloody shield is is still incredible.
Oh yeah, and it's you know he's stripped of his rank and dishonorably discharged and all that. So
and can I just jump in? That is actually one of my other favorite things about the show is that dialogue when he's being stripped.
Oh, yeah,
because like I feel like that's actually really appropriate reaction where he's like. This is amazing. This is hitting me. Speaking of what you just referenced a little bit ago about how like certain superheroes are held to a standard of like, you don't kill somebody. So, you know, Kingpin would play on that. It is fascinating to think about like, really, these are people that the government wanted stopped.
Yeah.
He was doing what he thought was mostly right in stopping them. And these people are trying to kill him.
Right.
And so like, why, again, I understand now, but like he's saying, why is it so shocking that I killed somebody in this line of work that you basically hired me to do? Like you hired me to stop these people. And now that I did, now I'm being like totally thrown aside and stripped of everything. Anyways, I don't side with him, but I'm saying I thought that like disagreement was well done.
Well, and no, I think it's a really, that scene I agree is well executed, even in the way that he starts off. Like if I could just explain, like he's trying to be calm. He doesn't like, I like that he doesn't come in like at 11. Like he eventually gets to like, you made me or you built me. But I think that that's well done by Wyatt Russell. But what you're saying, I think, yeah, the fascinating. Well, like
Hulk kills people, Thor kills people.
Well, that's Iron what I was going to say. People. Well, Captain America kills people. Yeah. Like go back and watch the first Avenger or Winter Soldier.
Right. But this one's caught on tape. And that's fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, that my point being, I think it's handled exactly the way it should be in the show and the kind of the level of backlash. But I think that it's interesting how people watched Falcon Winter Soldier, and then by the time he kind of comes back around to help in the final episode, they're like, no, I don't know about that. Like he's a bad guy. But really all he's done is what most of the Avengers have done. I mean, definitely Clint and Natasha. And so it's just like, but they've always done it either in the shadows or in the context of this like massive battle where nobody faults them. But it is interesting, like, you know, this guy that, especially a guy that has dedicated his entire life to service.
Which I guess is a larger conversation of, I think what works in the show is like the themes overall, I guess, and some of the questions the show is asking or trying to ask. Like the things you are confronted with thinking about.
Right.
Are effective.
Well, even like the questions that the Zemo poses constantly, where he's like, is it like, can we afford to have anyone have this kind of power? Like, you know, and just talking about like, have you, but that's the problem, right? Like, you've never met another Steve Rogers, and just these, and even that setting up the fact that Sam ultimately decides not to take the serum and to be like, to your point, a totally different Captain America than Steve Rogers. Like, there are, My kind of final what works is just, yeah, I think they're asking legitimately interesting questions. The most kind of pressing and, you know, the central one is, how can Sam Wilson, a man who's a black man who's grown up in the South, even like, how can he ever feel comfortable being Captain America? And I think that, like we said, is explored really well. I think the transition for me into what doesn't work, I'll say a lot of the questions that I think had a lot of promise could have been explored more effectively than they were.
My final what works is, I like a lot of Bucky in this show. I like I like his storyline of going through the trauma and having to work through that. I like the flashbacks we see of Winter Soldier, where it's like, holy God, I forgot he was like that, because you've almost forgotten at this point.
One, even in episode three, when he, when like he's kind of pretending,
how easily he snaps back into it.
Right.
Love that struggle. Excited to see what they do with him going forward, because that's an interesting spot now. I'll get to that in a minute here at the end. But no, I like that. I know what you said, that like, as an episode by episode thing, some of the things, like the dinner with the guy at the bar, doesn't work as well. But I find that really moving.
Yeah.
Even I think live, I found that moving. Like when he goes back to finally tell him how heartbreaking that is. And also just like how hard that would be if it was realistic for someone like that who's trying to make amends. And I like seeing him like make amends in other ways. Before he can tell him, he is like weekly meeting with him, taking him out to dinner and whatever. And even like the little triggers and stuff, I mostly like when he's like, oh man, my son used to like that. And it's like, God dang it. He doesn't know. So in general, I like how they handled Bucky. Let's get into what we didn't think worked as well after a quick word from these sponsors.
Okay, so I've really enjoyed on this rewatch paying attention to the different creators that are involved at different levels, especially because we've started seeing some return folks, like especially, I don't know when this was announced, but after our WandaVision talk, I saw that several, like I think the Coven of Chaos and Vision Quest series are both having a ton of WandaVision writers return, you know, so it's, you start to see people showing back up in various ways. My point is, I've enjoyed seeing, like, in light of our conversations about which writers pair well with different directors, and we've talked about Loki and Multiverse Madness and stuff, kind of seeing how these different pairings look, especially because we do have some of the writers from Falcon Winter Soldier coming over for Captain America New World Order, but we do not have Kerry Skoglund coming over for that project. Although this was one of these early Disney Plus shows where we had one director on everything. Now I feel like it's been a split for a bit. But here she directs every episode. And I think my big takeaway here, unfortunately, is I don't think I enjoy Kerry Skoglund's directing very much.
Which I love that you said that right now, because we've not been the podcast that has really pointed out the director on like a negative side of things.
Well,
ever.
It's
you know, everyone always jumps to the writing or the
right,
acting.
Right. Which I normally feel like I have more pet peeves and or I'm more likely to be really impressed by like
sure.
good or bad writing yeah, sure. than directing. But I
mostly agree with this.
I think that I've just it's complicated how much you assign to a director, I know, because there's totally. A lot that goes into this. But one, you know, I think the buck does stop with them when it comes to the final version of the scene that we see. And I feel like you can tell, like, it's always fascinating to me to see how when you do have the same writers and the same actors, how different directors can pull different performances. And I think this is something that you see from – you get this a couple times in the MCU. Particularly with if you take writers out and just see the performances, it's kind of wild sometimes how different like a Russo directed character can be than a Whedon directed character, dialogue aside, like just you can tell what they're being told to bring into a scene and how well the actor will kind of respond to that and give their best.
Okay. So like, I think I 100% agree with you because typically we would jump at the writing as far as like on paper. I don't think this idea works or like this line just is cheesy. Like you and I have talked about that right. off air or the acting where I'll be like, I think the line's good. I just don't buy this person's like face or whatever.
Right.
In this case, I get done with the show and I'm like, man, I like the questions they were trying to get to. I don't think that like Sam or Bucky give bad performances per se. And I don't even know that like the lines are that far off. I think it's just missing like some glue, like stuff
yeah.
just doesn't work. And so you're talking about the different directors. Like why does that one shot in Civil War of can you scoot over please or scoot up your seat?
Oh, right.
Why does that work so well?
Uh-huh.
And it's the same characters. But here, I just don't feel the chemistry. And it's
yeah.
like, it's not that that line is so original from Marcus and McFeely
right.
that like, and it's not that they like act it so differently. It's just something
yeah.
is missing in the way that the director was able to bring out the chemistry.
Yeah.
And I can point out a lot of little things like,
yeah.
like a scene that really doesn't work for me is like that counseling session where they have to get real close. And I can see how like on paper, that was like kind of funny,
right?
But not like then they have to inch closer. Now
yeah.
they're almost staring each other in the face. This is exactly what they don't want. You know, that's what's being
written. Right, right.
And then like, I understand what they're trying to do as actors. Like, oh, really? Sure.
Uh-huh.
But something just doesn't feel right for me on a rewatch. I'm like,
yeah,
like
yeah.
It's almost cringy for a second. And I'm like, why is this not working for me? It's not funny, but it's
yeah.
not like sad enough. And then, like, when Bucky escalates it, I'm like, but that feels like out of place now.
Well, and to me, it feels like.
And then Sam won't hear him, and that feels like out of character. Because Bucky finally is getting there, and then Sam shuts it down, and I'm like, wait,
right.
what?
Which in fairness, is a writing concern, I guess, in
yeah,
the way the scene is structured.
Yeah, I can't put 100% blame on the director. I am not trying to say that.
No, but I think I just. And part of the reason why I want to point this out is I also. You know, as we get into shows that are split among directors, but even other kind of, you know, like Loki, when we get there, I think is the opposite in that I think Kate Herron is an excellent director. And I think that I noticed through this last watch of that show, how much stuff like this is just.
She like minimizes the concerns
yeah.
versus like making more of them or.
And I wonder if part of that is just having a clear understanding of what you're wanting to get out of each scene or out of each episode in that like there are scenes in Falcon Winter Soldier where it's like, I can see what she, like some of the Isaiah scenes that we've talked about, like I can see how she knew what we wanted was like an emotional connection here between Isaiah and Sam. It needs to be heartbreaking. It needs to be compelling enough for us to see the world from his eyes.
Which I got.
And I think she gives us that. But I think in scenes like that, like you're talking about, like some of the kind of buddy cop scenes,
That's it. That's it for me.
I don't think they and
the
maybe
buddy cop thing is the worst part of the show.
It doesn't feel like there was a clear understanding. Like, for instance,
and they try to start right away with the buddy cop thing. The very first interaction is like, you shouldn't give him the shield away, and they start talking about the wizard and stuff.
Yeah,
which is like, I don't know. I didn't have enough. Maybe they assumed we had background on them two being buddy cop. Like, emotionally, we'd already like, oh, they are buddy cop. But
right.
Like, there's like 2 seconds of it in Civil War. Like, give me some intro into how this turned into buddy cop.
I totally agree. And that's what's kind of strange is the Civil War interactions that we got are so brief, but set up this dynamic that, you know, now, like, when they're doing press tours, even before Falcon Winter Soldier, it was always this kind of them ribbing each other and making fun. And it sort of carried over from the on-screen relationship to just Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan. And it's almost like the creators here were counting on us, like, bringing that in with us. But there's not – yeah, you're right. Like, we never even saw them have, like, a legitimate
– relationship.
Yeah.
But then even without that, you can execute it well because there are all kinds of buddy cop story. I mean, the other guys is a buddy cop thing that from the second you see it, it just works. And you know – my strength is not being able to tell you why that is. My strength, I think, is that I do feel like I have an emotional gauge on this stuff. And so I get done with it and go, like, I can't put my finger on exactly why this isn't working, but that just didn't work. Like, emotionally, what you were trying, if I had saw that in the editing room, I'd be like, this isn't it. Like, something is not right.
And yeah, like, I think it's largely the setup. Because I think I see what they were – like, they were trying to show, you know, Bucky's just generally angry because his best friend is gone. He's in a world where he doesn't know anybody. He's had his whole life stolen from him. I mean, he's had
– like, the trauma side of it, though, is better. Like, when – I mean, that part works.
Well, but I
like
think
when
it's
he
like,
wakes up and he's sleeping on the ground from that stuff.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The way he interacts even with his girlfriend or whatever – not girlfriend, the girl he goes on a date with.
But I just mean the reason he – like, I get why they would say Bucky and Sam are both now coming to the relationship kind of, like, tensed up and maybe with axes to grind. Because Bucky, like he says explicitly, I think, in episode 5, like, you know, that shield, it sort of means Steve to me. And, like, what you're – get like, by putting that aside, like, how – he would interpret that, and then how Sam would likewise be angry because Bucky, in so quickly dismissing his actions, does not even like take a second to think about what it would be like for Sam, which he also says in that conversation. And that's why like that conversation is so great when it finally comes. But I think just the way the show is structured, it's not really clear that that's what's going on. Behind this, like, Bucky says some things, but it always makes it seem like he's being, like weirdly pouty and immature about it. And then Sam is not, like, we're seeing Sam on the one hand be, like, the calm counselor that we saw him show up as in, like, Winter Soldier. And, again, like, I love those little mini interactions we get in Civil War, but maybe that's just not the... that version of it where it's like it's actually rooted in legitimate anger and trauma, maybe that doesn't create the most like entertaining, lighthearted like buddy comedy. Like in the other guys, it's like they're just fundamentally different people.
Sure.
That's not as much what we get here. That like that's normally how the comedy plays.
It's not like
in,
a
like,
good cop,
Lethal
bad
Weapon
cop.
Or something. Yeah.
yeah, exactly.
Like here it's just like, oh, they're both really struggling with like real wounds. It's just that you're right. It's like when it gets deep, when it's willing to go there is when I think
it's
actually
better.
Works.
Yeah, exactly. Here's another example of a scene that's just coming to my head right now. And you and I have talked about this off air. A scene that, like, on paper, I see what they were trying to do, and the big idea was the right call, but it just doesn't quite get there, is that first date he goes on, right? Like, I feel like the date he goes on is really working. Like, on paper, they're like, we need to go from here to he's going to get triggered about something. It's working. Like, I feel like the joke about how old he is and the glove that he always wears feels natural in the way, like, this forced date or this setup that I should say, right, is going is like really nice. Like the bartender's sweet to him. She's like, let's play a game, right? Like all this stuff is really working. And right, then mid game, mm-hmm, but the way this bartender friend of his like gets there is like something is not right. Like I don't know too many interactions where somebody would keep harping on the death of the child. You remember that? Like, what am I trying to say? I'm trying to say that, like, she says, you know what they say about being orphans, the worst hell or whatever, because what was she saying?
Well, she says there's no word for losing a, like, that you have like widow and widower, but there's no word for losing a kid.
Nothing about that line is inherently incorrect, but like, I just don't know in a date like that, that you on a first date, you would get that deep into like proverbs basically on what this is.
And I think for me, I agree. Like, I don't read that to be a great, like there, I don't read that to be an excellent line. Although I also don't think that there's anything wrong with it. There's something to me, and this is why I kind of come back to Skoglund, about the execution of that scene where it's like the, like, I think had that been delivered even slightly differently than it were, it could have saved it.
Like when they're like, you know, oh, that's so bad about Yuri. Yeah, that's tough. Man, that's really too bad. It's something like that. It's right, like, yeah. Right. And it's like, okay, that would be the end of the conversation or like, or something else. But she's like, you know, man, it's almost like she knows. Yeah, there's a disconnect there. And by the way, just there are a lot of things, again, I liked on the big picture scale, but there are a lot of sequences like that, that I just, even as a Zemo fan, there were a lot of Zemo sequences that I'm like, I see what they're trying to do.
Right.
I just, it's not working.
Yeah, the Zemo, so the Zemo thing is my other big, what doesn't work is
this missed opportunity.
You know, we put it in this category because I think it could have been better. There are a lot of things that I like about Zemo here. Like I was talking about the questions he asks. I like some of the conversations he has with Sam, especially. I just, like, this is sort of the flip side, right? Like I was saying earlier that even though this series sort of leaves most characters where we met them or where we left them at the end of Endgame, that I think it's still worthwhile to do kind of deep dives like we do with Sam and Bucky, to your point. Like, I think, and I'll get to that in a second, but on the Zemo side, I really feel like there was no point to having Zemo in this series other than fan service. Like, they knew we would be excited to see Zemo. They knew that we associate him with Civil War, which is a well-loved movie, and they need to get people that loved that movie excited about this project. And so Zemo is back. But it's like, I remember coming into this, we were theorizing, like, I wonder if maybe like Zemo snapped. And then because of that, when he came back, he was no longer like in prison. He was able to escape. Or like, how is this going to set things up in the future? And it's crazy to me that it does none of that. Like, we literally meet him exactly where we left him in Civil War. He gets out for a second and then he goes back into prison and has this final plan. He's going to try to, like, I guess the only thing is his butler person is able to kill the other Flag Smashers. But even that is like, that was not a thread that was there before anyway. Like the
little hints, like, of Spider-Man there, the original, remember? The butler.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Spider-Man 3. Spider-Man 3. Harry, I loved your father.
This butler is also able to carry out car bombing.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, true. I think.
And in general, is it a little weird about all the money stuff with it? Like, I get from the comic that he was a baron, so he is supposed to be super, super wealthy, but we don't get a sense of that the first time he's introduced.
And which would be fine if it, like, I feel like if the two were more compatible, then I would be okay with, like, oh, you know, you didn't mention, but he does have a lot of money. Like, there are certain villains that I can think of that I think, like, I would not be as bothered by the fact that they have this, like, backstory of being, like, nobility, Eastern European nobility. But because he was so kind of, like, the grounded, like I was an intelligence officer and I lost my whole family. I'm just going to dedicate my entire skill set to taking down the people that I blame for that. Like it feels so, it feels like a fundamentally different character than the Zemo from the comics in a way where I'm like, fine.
Or even the Zemo from Civil War.
Well, no, I mean the Civil War Zemo feels like a fundamentally different one from the comics.
But this feels different than the Civil War Zemo.
And this feels, I think what they were trying to do, and they've done this a good bit in Phase 4, is, you know what, like we have people that are on board. We don't need to do as much of the like de-comicifying thing, and we can just like present things as they are. And you see that a lot. But I think that that only works if you're not kind of contradicting a prior representation. And I think when you do have such a grounded version of Zemo and then decide that you want a more comic booky version where he is the like kind of fallen nobility and he's got the hood and he's got the coat. Like,
I have a coat like that, by the way.
It's just a hard, and I'm not saying all of that is bad. Like there were moments of it that I enjoyed. But it did feel like it felt like a different character. And it felt like like I was saying last week, I thought that the little bits of Darcy and Jimmy Woo we got made their appearances in prior films better, I think, because you're now more attached to them. I really think this is, because whenever I meet Zemo in Civil War, when I'm rewatching and I know that he is actually like the father of, or sorry, that he's the son of a baron and that he's like got all these kind of underground connections or past or whatever. It just doesn't, it makes it less moving to me. Like I like the idea that he was kind of not that the fact that he's a baron makes him a bad guy, but I feel like there's sort of an implication that he's this guy that's for a long time been very familiar with like Madripoor and the criminal underground. And I think I just like the idea that he was like a good guy that lost his family and that it kind of drove him to this. Cause even in Civil War, that's kind of what we get from him, right? Like whenever he meets T'Challa, he's like, I'm sorry about your father. You know, he seemed a good man. It's like, it's
one of my favorite scenes, by the way.
I know. And we do, that's the thing. We do get moments of that here. Like we get bits of interaction like that where he seems sincere. But instead of the other side being him kind of doing the cold calculated thing like he did when he was like villaining in Civil War, it's more like it's always over the top. Like the creepy scene of giving candy to the kids, which is like, which works. Like I say creepy in that it's supposed to be creepy. Like the music that's playing, it's like.
It has the nursery rhyme or whatever.
Yeah. But it's just a different kind of villain. It's like we went from a Mission Impossible villain to like a comic book movie villain. And it just doesn't feel like those connect. Sorry, that was a long rant, but I feel pretty strongly about this one. And I think I did when it was first airing. And it's just, that's one thing that did not improve on the rewatch, unfortunately.
I mean, even if you change your mind, you're allowed to. I agree. I don't have anything to add. I agree. Something feels off there too. I think you put words to it. I'm going to tell you something that I don't think works, but I'm going to give you a warning here because once I say this, you'll never be able to unhear it. So I am going to ruin this portion of the show for you. So fair warning. I cannot stand how often the writers had the actors repeat the name of the person they are talking to in the conversation. It would be like if every sentence I started, I said, Rob, what do you think about this, Rob? I don't think that's a good point, Robbie. No, that's a great point, Robbie. It's like, okay, at some point, the audience understands who you're talking to. Right. Context and us seeing it means you don't have to repeat the name. I cannot get over how often Bucky was written to say, Sam.
Right.
Sam, you should never have gotten rid of that shield, Sam. Sam, I'm just so mad about the shield, Sam. We're going to go find Zemo.
Right.
Zemo is here. Zemo, that's not what we're talking about. Zemo, you're out of line. It's like, stop repeating the name. Yeah. We know who you're talking to. It's the smallest thing ever, but I can't get over it. And now you think I'm being funny. You think I'm making a joke.
No.
But when you go back and watch it, you'll be like, why did they rewrite the name so often?
Yeah.
We should never have given that shield up, Sam.
Well, it's funny because it can be when it's
Sam's
used.
Sam's the only one in the room.
Well, and when that's used sparsely,
yes,
it can be really effective.
It's like when Annika, if she says Kyle or Kyle Dean, right. Remember Molly, Kyle Dean. That's so funny. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Inside jokes. Love the apartment someday. No, but like for real, in like a conversation with my wife, if she's like, Kyle, I didn't say that. Then I'd go like, whoa.
Right.
Like emphasis on my name being repeated here. Obviously, I know you're talking to me, so you're repeating it for a different reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole point of using it. If there's 10 people in the room, I get it. Because now I have to single out, I'm talking to you, Robbie.
Right.
But when it's two people in a room, stop repeating it like it's an overly dramatic thing when it's not meant to be.
Right.
And like maybe you would say, hey, Kyle, like that time when he says we shouldn't have given up the shield, Sam.
Right.
That works. Okay, that one's fine.
Right.
But when you do it 100 times, it's like, come on.
Well, no, it's like the difference between, again, the talk about Civil War, whenever we have like that great scene with Cap and Tony when he's trying to get him to sign, and Steve does the like, ah, Tony. Like that's a moment where it's like, makes
huge emphasis on it now.
But it's like, it's not like the whole conversation he's walked in and been like, hey, Steve. And he's like, hey, Tony. So, Steve, I've been thinking, yeah, Tony, that makes sense.
Yeah. It kills me. There are just quite a few, in my opinion. And again, I think the show does some things well. And I hate being the guy that's negative. But in general, for me on a rewatch, I don't enjoy the rewatch of this as much because there are a lot of little execution things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You brought up some of the big plot things like Zemo, a few other big zoomed out things that are not as effective from a directorial standpoint. But I'm not going to say them all. But there are just lots of little things like that. Like we talk about bad special effects. The worst special effects I think the MCU has ever had is the fight on top of that truck, the semi-truck. And it's weird because in the assembled, they really highlight how they turned this random road into wherever they're supposed to be in Europe. And I'm blanking on where they're supposed to be. But it's like, man, that's not a thing to highlight. Like, again, if this was Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible, he would get on a semi and you would go to Europe and you would shoot it while he's fighting on a semi. And right. I understand that that's not always how it works. By the way, I have so many little beefs like this as I've been rewatching. None of these are make or break, but like in Loki, the first shot of Loki, we'll talk about this in a second, next week. No, not next week, in like a couple months. But the first shot of Loki is him in the Gobi Desert.
Right, right.
And it's clearly a CGI desert. And I understand why budget is limiting, but like it makes it look soundstagey and artificial when really all you had to do was go to the Gobi Desert and film that sequence. And then you can CGI things in.
Although I think what's...
You're not going to change my mind on this.
No, well, I recognize
go
that.
Go to Arizona then, if it's more cost-effective.
Well, but one, both of those were projects that were being filmed in the thick of COVID, okay, which I do think we have to recognize.
All right, easy, Robbie.
And so
that's fair.
I think that changes the conversation. The other thing that's interesting
which is why I waited 77 minutes to bring it up as like a part of my...
Well,
it's not a deal breaker for me,
and I don't.
But it's not good,
and I don't know that can. Certainly now, that's no longer like for people that had issues with Quantumania. One, that's not like a movie that would have benefited from a particular visit to a location. But two, we're beyond the COVID excuse now. But I do think as we're getting through the kind of early part of the rewatch,
that's
one point. The other thing that I thought was interesting that someone pointed out that I wasn't aware of, in part because I'm just not the VFX nerd anyway. But I guess that there's a technique they'll use, and once I heard this, it actually makes a ton of sense. Where they will go to location and they'll film whatever they can, and then they'll also essentially take a shot or shots of the location in case whenever they're doing reshoots, they don't have time to go back, and then they'll just put people in front of a green screen that is the actual location where they were. So it's still sort of like, it's not like it's all generated. It's from the actual location, but they didn't go back to get the shot. They did it. And I think like that's why in certain movies I've been like, wait a second, this can't be a green screen, because I just saw, like, it looked so real a second ago, and I saw them interacting with the world in a way that makes me think that this is shot outside. But now I see it and it clearly looks like they're in front of a green screen. And now I'm realizing...
Are you saying Marvel movies or just movies in general?
Marvel. I mean, I think movies in general, but I think Marvel movies do this a lot because of the amount of reshoots that they wind up doing in the like post-production stage. But I do, like, I can picture now several, even like phase three movies that I think did this in moments where it's not long and it's not like a meaningful enough shot to take away from a lot. But there are moments where I'm like, oh, like, yeah, this feels less grounded.
What you just said, I guess, is a bummer right there for me. And that's, I mean, okay. Besides the dispute with actual VFX studios, which I'm not going to get into again.
Right.
The biggest disappointment for me is that they don't put an emphasis on that. Like, whether that is, again, because there's so much content coming, like Mission Impossible, right?
Right.
Can do it because they have 5 years, 2 years, whatever it is, to make one film.
Right.
So they can put all their money into, we're going to every location. We're going to South Africa. We're doing mm-hmm. all these filmings live.
Right.
And partially because it's also Tom Cruise, like he wants to do the stunt so it can even be more realistic, et cetera. But with the amount of content, if the argument is they just can't keep up, I guess that is fundamentally the bummer then that priority wise, you didn't have enough budget to get out to the Gobi Desert or to get everybody out to the European place they're in or whatever.
Right.
So I guess I'm just saying like, both things can be true, I guess. Like they, you know, during COVID, it was difficult and all that stuff, but it doesn't mean that it turned out very good.
No,
which is just a bummer.
And I don't think, you know, it's, I know that they were in, Prague when COVID hit. Cause I remember they had to go to an island
or something.
Oh, see, I haven't, that's the one assembled from, well, I think there are a couple that have
they
come
were
out since
in
that,
Europe
seen,
for
I
like,
haven't seen that one.
Yeah, again, we're not going to get into all this, but they were in Europe for like, yeah, a hot minute, like 3 days.
Yeah.
Then found out they had to go cancel everything, go home, which I get is horrible. It's a terrible bummer for them. But then when they finally went back, I think they went to like an island in like the Caribbean or something. Don't call me on that. Somewhere in maybe South America area that they then went back and finished all the shooting there. And they like recreated something. Not all the shooting, because obviously some of it is back in America.
I do think you're...
Anyways, I'm way on a tangent I didn't want to get on. Just in general, the VFX are not... This is not what I would show someone and be like, look at this.
Well, and I do... Yeah. One, with the big COVID caveat, but just keeping in mind this ongoing conversation and kind of your reaction to that post-production process. I do agree that whatever has happened in the past few years, and I say the past few years... because I don't want to peg this just on post-endgame stuff. Actually, this is a good transition to my last what doesn't work here that's maybe just more of a reflection in general that I'm curious to get your thoughts on. I don't know at what point it became so important to pump out so much so quickly that it becomes, well, you know, the release date's the release date. It's the deadline. We got to get it out. So... whatever shape it's in, you know, we're moving ahead. Like, I'm encouraged by the fact, like, some people see the Marvels being pushed back as like, uh-oh, like trouble with the Marvels. And I see that as, hey, you know, let's take a sec and actually make sure that everything here is up to snuff before we release it. And I like that. Like, to your point about the Mission Impossible films or any other films that don't have quite the level of pressure that has been put on the Marvel films, there are visual issues everywhere, like in any kind of action film, but I feel like it's become more pronounced, and that's a bummer, because I think for the longest time you and I talked about how rarely we saw things like this in the earlier parts of the MCU, even, you know, parts that haven't aged as well, just because CGI wasn't as good then, there aren't some of these issues. And I hope that, and it seems like there are big shakeups going on. By these
issues, you mean it just looks a little unfinished at times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things,
that's the difference.
Things that it seems like they could have been able to accomplish that they didn't because of either
time, COVID, money, something.
Budget. Yeah. Where I'm like, it seems like in the past, they kind of, they just did what they needed to do to get what they thought, you know, like Civil War, you can watch and it's like, there are a lot of opportunities for things to look bad. And for the most part, there are a few things that I've caught that I think are more related to, like really the only thing in Civil War is the Tony armor, like still gets me. Not the armor itself, but the scene.
I know what you're talking about, the floating head thing,
but,
stop.
But that I think is Robert Downey Jr. being annoyed with having to wear so much stuff and him just paring down. Anyway, my point is, I think that there were times where they could do a better job or did do a better job. And I hope that with the shakeups that are going on for good or for bad at Marvel, that what I perceive to be a kind of like exhale and sit and like make sure we're all good moment, I hope it is that, and I hope it extends to stuff like this.
That's why we are okay with things getting pushed back. And I think we're officially getting really close to that point where the COVID reason is like you're running out of time for using the COVID reason. We just talked to Jeff Loveness and found out that, you know, like with a lot of Quantumania, he was writing it in the middle of COVID.
Right.
We're getting really close to where the people that are starting to work on these films are post-COVID being a massive thing.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But I think you're right. Like, I'd rather them go, man, we could really, like, tune this up for 3 more months and it would be even better. It's how I felt with the Fallen Order Jedi video game.
Oh,
where it's like, man, everything about this was really cool, but you didn't finish it. Like, you needed to wait, like, 6 months and keep working on it.
Which, man,
there's a new one coming out.
That is I'm curious to see how people respond to that, because I feel like some people love that game. I've only played a bit of it and it was fun, but not enough to really give a qualified opinion. Yeah. But some people I think are like really, really stoked about the new one.
The new one looks amazing. It's just like, you know, it's trying to be an open world thing, but it's like so small. Like it's open, but only for like 10 minutes. And then it's like, that's all we made. And like, there just could have been so much more there, but the actual mechanics are cool. Although they're a little jittery at times. So I feel like it wasn't finished. It's like how I feel about some of this, where it's like, man, you like the fight idea is so cool on top of the semi. It's just not, we're not done.
Yeah.
And it came out.
Which
I think in general is a good way to sum it up. What you said, like, that's just how I feel about a lot of the VFX in the last 3 or 4 years.
The other thing that I think is, whenever I say it's more of a general reflection, I'm curious to see if this continues on in phase five, if we're sort of done with it after phase four. But there are times where I really feel like Black Widow is the key example, but I feel the effects of how quickly we got from Civil War to Endgame. I mean, it was 3 years to wrap up like that entire story. And I think when it comes to Steve and Tony, it did that really, really well. But I think that for some of the other characters, it really had to fast track and then is now kind of going back. And so, for example, like I love that scene of Bucky, that flashback. And then I love how it kind of plays back in. I'm not saying it shouldn't have been here, but like that stuff that we never.
But you wish we had gotten it back then, as more filler then.
Like, I wish that we had gotten more of a chance to see the development of some of these characters instead of like being told again. There's no point in me saying this because I love the way that the story turned out in general,
sure.
And it's not like they can change it now. But I do think there are a couple times through phase four, because just the nature of how that was all structured, where like even like WandaVision, like we were saying, like it's the first time we kind of saw a little bit more of the Wanda and Vision stuff like leading up. Like what was so impressive about the Infinity Saga is how much we cared about their relationship after getting like maybe 15 minutes of screen time with them together. But I think
sure.
That's one thing in Falcon Winter Soldier I noticed is like, had we had more time with those characters individually and together with Bucky and Sam, I think that going back to your kind of original concern, the buddy cop thing, a lot of that would have just played better because we would have had that built in instead of as exposition.
we could go on and on and on and on and on with little things here or there. Like, for example, I really liked Madripoor. I thought that was so cool. The music that comes in when they're walking into Madripoor, that like boom, doom, 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 boom, boom, is so cool. Yeah. I mean, are you kidding me? So highlights on both sides. But and then on the, you know, I said a lot of the little things, but there are a lot more little things that I also feel like I let my overarching feeling as I leave going like, that show was fine. And so in closing, moving forward, what are some of your big takeaways here? I think in my case, it's just the obvious stuff, which is that I'm excited to see Sebastian Stan again as Bucky Barnes in Thunderbolts. Although, kind of like with Wanda, I'm really interested to see how they handle that character, because he's already a character that was a good friend of Steve Rogers, gets turned into an ultimate assassin, evil guy, who then now has had to work through all that stuff and turn back into like a good human via Wakanda, via all this stuff.
Right.
And now we're left at a point where like he's worked through that, like that last shot of him in New Orleans and, or Louisiana, and listening to Captain America's speech at the end, and like he's like a totally changed person, but now he's back in the Thunderbolts, which is like supposed to be kind of like the gray area thing. So like, I'll be interested to see if they, like, in some ways it's so cool to have the actual Winter Soldier like aggression character, because that's a dope character, but he's moved past that. So I'm interested to see what they do there. And then obviously with Sam, Captain America 4 New World Order comes out, I think, next year, although things are getting delayed all the time. And we'll see where they go with him there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one, again, one of the other biggest things we didn't talk about that didn't work is like the, and go back and listen to our original episodes, you'll hear this, but like the Power Broker reveal just like really doesn't do it for me. Like, I do not know if I like Sharon's turn here, but I say that to say we'll probably get follow up on that. Because that was a big cliffhanger at the end.
Well, yeah, and that's actually a great. I do not like that part. Well, what I would say moving forward for me is you covered the Sam Bucky stuff. I agree. I think I'm curious with Bucky because he has had a comics history with the Thunderbolts more recently. But I saw something like this the other day where Tom Brevoort, the editor in chief for Marvel Comics, was talking about how he loves the original kind of Ed Brubaker Winter Soldier return and kind of everything that immediately came out of that. But he feels like, which is validating for me because I felt like this with Bucky in the comics, like, what do you do? Like, he's you all you can do is bring him back. It's the reveal that's so like engaging and also horrifying. And then he has the redemption moment. And then it's like, who is Bucky now? Like, how do we feel about him? What entices us? Like, cause the mystery is gone. The like scary intensity is gone. So we like him as Bucky now, like as the person he was, but also like, what is his role within the larger narrative? I'm like, and that's not, again, I love Sebastian Stan and I think the character has been great in the MCU. I'm just curious to see where he goes. The only other thing I would say is, I still tend to think that Sharon Carter is a Skrull here.
Oh, I keep forgetting that. If she is, I'll be a big fan. That's the one where I'm like, I almost need it to be at this point.
Well, this is the second week in a row. I'm like, well, okay, that could be an issue, but Skrull. And so, who knows? But I recognize what I'm doing.
This was not written well. Skrull?
Love and Thunder. But
just wait.
So I think I would like that. That makes sense as a transition in terms of her role and what I think Secret Invasion is shaping into, like sort of an espionage thing.
And that would make sense for her to be there.
And I would like, just the way she does that call at the end, you know, like if she's calling some, like another Skrull agent to say like, I'm about to have all this access, like that.
That makes more sense than almost any character we've tossed out.
I think so.
Well, and the aerospace engineer could work.
The aerospace engineer.
But then that's a cool example of like a couple seeds being planted.
Yeah. I almost feel like the aerospace engineer will just be one of those things that is like a headcanon or not, because I just don't think they'll ever return to it, or if they do, it'll be in the Marvels maybe. But I do think that, like, this is one where if she isn't a Skrull, I'm going to be like, yeah, one, because that was just a weird character turn, to your point. And two, because, like what I've always said, the beauty of the Secret Invasion storyline is the buildup. Like, and I recognize they can't do the same level of buildup they did in the comics, but you have to have some buildup. So if, like, the first double agent Skrull that we meet is in Secret Invasion, I'm going to be... I'm going to be a little let down.
Yeah, sure.
Just given the number of projects that we had in Phase 4. Like, give me, like, one seed at least somewhere, and this feels like the best one.
Here's how I'm going to close the Falcon and Winter Soldier conversation. One thing I wanted to do was end it with my ranking, like the old school days. Yeah. But here's what's different now, which is really fun. I'm just going to reveal my preference rankings as I go along. So that way you can do it just like I'm doing it. And so I've obviously, people know this. WandaVision's my number one Disney Plus show. So, but again, I'm not ranking compared to all of them. I'm going to rank them compared to the one that I'm watching. So as of now, it's WandaVision, Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Okay.
And then as I get to each project, I'll tell you how it shifts.
Can you imagine the collective gasps if you had taken this moment to say that, in fact, Falcon Winter Soldier is your number one?
Falcon Winter Soldier, WandaVision, way down here. Huge gap, WandaVision. We're going to totally shift gears here to close out. We teased this at the beginning. Why don't you set up a tiny bit of this clip that you're going to hear here in a second from David. Totally shifting gears back to Ant-Man world for a second. And then as a reminder, the full episode is available now on YouTube and on Friends From Work Plus. So check those out, but set us up here. Cause you did the interview.
So yeah, like I said at the top, we got to talk to David, who, if you don't know who we're referring to, as you know, you can Google image and you immediately will know. He is currently, I think just a week or two ago, the second volume of his Count Crowley comic released. You can find, I found it at the Austin Books and Comics store here. Go check that out. It's really well done. It's really fun, especially if you're into kind of classic monster stuff. So we talked about that a good bit, but we also got to talk about just how much David has contributed to the comic book movie universes that we all love so much. So I got the chance to ask him why he's kept returning to those types of movies and what comic book movies mean to him. What is it about having appeared in so many comic book movies, you know, from different, not just different franchises, but you know, you've appeared in multiple Marvel and DC films. What is it that has drawn you to those films, and what do you think there is about those films that continue to resonate with folks the way that they do?
I mean, I've always been in love with the medium of comic books because they are our modern mythology. They are these larger than life ways that we can wrestle with and try to wrap our heads around the big questions that we think about. And they're such incredible ways to escape into the magic of our imaginations. There's no limits in the pages of a comic book. And now that we're living in an age where special effects and, you know, directors' visions are as unlimited as their capacity to take them, we can see these stories brought to life in, like, the most epic ways. I love all the things that a great comic book film can achieve, from the macro scale and getting to live in a world like the Quantum Realm or the James Gunn Guardians of the Galaxy universe, all the way to a small, gritty, indie, you know, dramatic thriller like Logan. You know, it's just, it's a powerful space, and I'm so lucky I get to live in it.
Look, David says so many cool things in the full interview, and that's why you should go check it out on Friends From Work Plus or YouTube. But in summary, the biggest takeaway is, as I was editing that, I was just blown away at how much he loves his thing and how much passion he has for comics, comic books, the stories behind them, and then portraying those in film as well. So in general, I err on the side of Candace all the time, which is, like, I get inspired by people who are passionate about their thing. That's the benefit of having someone like David in the MCU. And so, and to not have been offended that Kurt's not in it.
Right.
But then to be so pumped, even more so, like you said, now he gets to play Veb. You'll hear more of that in the full interview. Please check that out. You're not going to want to miss it. Again, YouTube or Friends From Work Plus. And as a tiny little teaser, in the future, One thing we are offering exclusively to our Friends From Work Plus people is the chance to ask guests like David a question. And so every time we find out we're going to be interviewing somebody, we'll post a quick little thing on Patreon or on a newsletter or whatever that says, like, what do you want us to ask him? And we'll choose one question from one of our patrons and exclusively ask that person that question, which is really cool.
And people send in questions for this interview, which they will recognize made it in. However, I think in the future, we're going to take a chance and have the opportunity to even
make it more. Yeah.
Right. Kind of shout out to those folks in particular.
So as always, thank you so much for listening. We are so grateful for you. You know what to do. Go do all the stuff I always say. And we'll be back here next week talking about Spider-Man Far From Home, which your boy is higher on than most people in the world. So excited to talk about Spider-Man Far From Home next week here on Friends From Work.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.